Hello and welcome to the Faculty Podcast, covering the latest breakthroughs, research news and insight delivered by the world's leading academic and industry figures. In this episode, William Herstein argues evidence from neuroscience and cognitive science can illuminate and inform the nature of responsibility and agency.
When we determine that somebody is responsible for something such as a crime, we use two basic criteria. First, did the person actually commit the act, right? But notice this alone is not enough to determine whether they're responsible and for what exactly. Hitting a pedestrian with your car, for example, could have one of several different causes, each of which involves you in a different crime. If there was a malfunction in your car with the accelerator pedal, you bear much less blame than if you hit the pedestrian while using your cell phone. Further down that road, if you planned to run over that person, stalked him and intentionally ran him over all the way rather than stopping at any point, we are satisfied of full culpability. So there are mental events, the planning, the intending, that happened in this case that make you fully guilty of a serious crime. These are the mental events we're trying to characterize in our theory. We don't blame children for certain things because we believe they don't yet have full control over those things, right? At the other end of life, people with Alzheimer's can lose the ability to control their actions and make decisions in a rational way. So when we praise and blame people, we're obviously trying to apply positive and negative reinforcement to them, but only if they meet certain criteria, only if they have a certain type of control over their behavior. Damaged brain parts or processes can definitely make someone less responsible for a crime, or so we argue, my colleagues Katrina Sifford and Tyler Fagan and I, in that book. Or it can also make them not responsible at all if the damage is bad enough. But the thing is, not just any brain damage, right? Damage to perceptual systems, for instance, if it's correctable, does not reduce your responsibility. For example, there's several different ways that brain damage can cause a loss of color vision. People who have this condition can still drive, but they need to correct for their color blindness by memorizing the position of the traffic lights, presumably red on top, green on the bottom. If somebody has this condition, go through a red light and kill somebody, they're still responsible because of the fact they could have and should have corrected their problem. So it looks like the parts of the brain that are responsible for making these corrections are very important for responsibility. They're also the parts of the brain that plan complex actions, exert directed attention, switch our task when the need arises, or inhibit an action from being executed. Cognitive scientists call these executive processes. Cognitive neuroscientists have isolated them to a certain brain network consisting of three interconnected parcels of cortex. That's the wrinkled gray outer covering of the brain. They call this the cognitive control network. So in a very real way, this network controls what you think about, which would include planning and decision-making. It detects inconsistencies and initiates thinking to resolve them. It can correct both perception and memory in certain circumstances. For example, I think I see my neighbor in a hotel lobby, which is odd, since I'm on vacation in Mumbai. Then executive processes activate to resolve the inconsistency. I realize that it can't be him because he never travels, never mentioned India, etc. But what if someone is not capable of making these sorts of corrections of first impressions? Schizophrenics, for example, can have trouble rejecting delusional thoughts, and in rare cases, they're unable to prevent them from causing harmful actions to people. We generally don't hold these people responsible, the schizophrenics, because we don't believe they're capable of correcting their problem. Schizophrenia typically involves serious executive processing problems. Well, it looks like being responsible for certain things, typically serious things, has a mental requirement. You have to know what it is you're doing and do it on purpose. The act should match your intentions, including the consequences that you plan for. So my colleagues and I argue that executive activity captures this essential mental component. One of the battles we're trying to fight in academia is with a group of experts, scholars, et cetera, who argue that neuroscience is fundamentally irrelevant to ethical issues such as responsibility. after all, ethics is about what we should do. Science is about what we, in fact, do. So how can science be relevant to ethics, they ask? Well, if we think of society as a very complicated functional system, we're all engaged in all sorts of functional interactions that make up the society itself. We can see that there are certain things the people who make up the society should do. They should conform themselves to certain social rules and norms. Parents should take care of their children. People should respect the needs of others and so on. So we have the ability to plan complex actions involving other people, considering their wants and needs and many other characteristics they have. We have the ability to inhibit actions that are unwise, ineffective, or hurtful actions. We have the ability to ensure that we perceive something, like a traffic light, to ensure that we do something, like pick up kids after school. Society depends heavily on these sorts of abilities. We need to know how they work to allow societies to happen. There's no point in requiring ourselves to do things that we simply can't do. We need to know exactly what the scope of our control over ourselves is and how its mechanisms work. Then we can know in a much more exact way what we should expect of each other and what a guilty mind looks like. Our legal verdicts, I think one good result of this is that they can be much more just, especially as applied to people with mental problems. I think the practical things would be that, the way we treat, the way we punish people, basically put them in prison and throw away the key for as long as we can afford to, is not good for their executive processing. It's exactly the opposite of what they need. Instead of learning how to make good decisions, all their decisions are made for them. You know, they live a sort of an environment, sounds like mixed with fear and total routine. So exactly the opposite of, so, you know, one thing we obviously should be doing is training the executive processes of people. And in terms of kids, we now know a lot more about how they master the different executive processes. They don't all come online at the same time. Some kids have trouble with inhibition a lot later than other kids. Working with autistic children, they have massive difficulties getting the executive processes up and running. So in the future, there are all kinds of good therapeutic directions to go in.